I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed valleys, stair, man. I breathe the mountain air.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the show. It's been a turbulent few days since I recorded this podcast with Ryan Grimm. I certainly wish the president a quick recovery. Today, though, we are continuing with our mini-series on state house candidates running in Pennsylvania. This conversation I had with Ryan Grimm brought up a couple of really key issues that I think are impacting our rural areas as well as most areas of Pennsylvania. But chief among them, we talked about combating brain drain, creating a more robust rural economy, and investing in infrastructure. Without further ado, I'm going to play the clip and let you listen to the interview. Welcome to the program. It's so nice to have you. Thank you. Thank you for joining us, Ryan.
Absolutely.
So I'm really curious. Your district is a rural district, and a problem facing.
Barry.
Yeah. I mean, it's Elk County, and I want to say Cameron, but it's
Clearfield.
Clearfield, that's right. Ugh, I always mix up those two. So it's Elk and Clearfield County. Most of them, right? Most of all of Elk County and most of Clearfield.
The northern part, yes.
Okay, and I think people often forget that Elk County is it used to be a Democratic stronghold a long time ago, until fairly recently.
So most of the area was Elk County was full of major Democrats, had a very strong union base. Like you just mentioned before, Cameron County used to be very Democratic. That is switched as well. But we're at least trying to make it at least more towards the middle and bring it back to a point where it's more person based, and we're picking our elected officials based on values, not what letters next to their name.
Absolutely. A problem that's facing a lot of rural areas across the country, but especially right here in Pennsylvania, is brain drain. And brain drain is just where our younger people, they're graduated from high school and then they're skipping town to pursue higher education or employment in Pittsburgh or Erie or, you know, Philadelphia. You know, a lot of my friends went off to cities. One of the platform priorities that you talk about is addressing brain drain. And you also come to this from the perspective of a young person that stayed. How do we combat brain drain and help people that want to stay in our rural areas and get jobs and have a family?
So admittedly, I did move to Pittsburgh for a few years right out of school.
Shame.
I'm just as guilty as everybody else. But through that experience, I kind of gained the knowledge of what we were missing here firsthand, and it's a lack of technology, a lack of really knowledge of the working class that's available in our area, and the skills to join the working class in our area right out of high school. And what I mean by that is not just to get an entry-level job or just kind of work your way from the top, but at least start with a leg up, because that's why everybody goes to school, is so they can almost skip the entry level part and they want to leg up on the job market, essentially. So I can take from that experience and look back now and realize that one of the toughest things was buying a house. You hear first-time homeowners, loans, everything like that. That process is painful. If you actually do have a leg up and you're making a decent amount of money and you're taking the steps to be successful, it's almost impossible to get a decent loan for your first time. My wife's a nurse. I was working a landscaping job, and we made too much to qualify for any sort of assistance loan in purchasing a house, which is scary purchasing a home in an area is scary to begin with, let alone the banks telling you, well, you make too much money to qualify for any assistance, but you don't have enough equity for us to give you a decent deal. So that ends up being a huge deterrent because you're not making as much money as you would in Pittsburgh or anything else. So that's one reason I feel that people get pushed towards the Pittsburgh, the more urbanized areas, because if they're going to rent, why not make more money in an area that has a higher job market? I think these issues can be combated by better technical training in our schools. What I mean by that is more focus on construction, more focus on metal shop and wood shops. Most of our factories in the area are powdered metal or metal-based operations. And I was fortunate, I graduated from Cameron County, and I could still hop on a CNC lathe and probably work at a job at any one of the factories because we had an extensive program that back in the day was funded by a giant grant that since has been dismissed. And now that class is no longer afforded to the students. I don't think that it should be deprioritized that way. I think we should be applauding people in that field instead of telling them they must go to college, they must go get a four-year degree to make any sort of money. We need to be telling them at a very young age, hey, you could have a great life, a great lifestyle in this area, and all the tools are here if you just are interested, and kind of celebrate that instead of, oh, well, you're taking a shop class, that's the easy way out, that's an easy A. Mr. Smith hands out A's left and right, so that's just a GPA booster. I'm in AP biology, so I don't have time for anything like metal shop, so you just must be a loser. That kind of talk and kind of demeaning of the whole trade is something we need to work on from the bottom up to build up the confidence and the celebration of these kids that are going into the field. And then I believe it's my theory that coming straight out of school, they would be more likely to enjoy their work because they have a better sense of purpose. They feel like what they're doing is right and have more of a contribution to our area and a more grassroots to plant in the 75th district.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think something that was initially a very key component of the Democratic platform was that no matter what job you're working, you know, there can be dignity in all kinds of work. And whether you're a college professor, you know, or a banker or a welder or a carpenter, or, you know, that's a respectable job and there should be dignity in all kinds of work.
Absolutely.
And so you see the path to giving our youth the ability to stay at home is just mm-hmm. through, not even necessarily through community and technical schools, but just through the forms that are already there, through our high schools mm-hmm. and technical schools that are already in place, just giving them these classes, giving them the skills, and destigmatizing these types of labor.
Absolutely. And that's kind of a communal effort. As a state representative, it's not something I can snap my fingers and then all of a sudden we have more people staying out of high school. It's more of a, you got to build a foundation of propping these kids up, cheering for them, and really making them feel like, hey, like you were saying, it's a sense of nobility. If I enter the workforce, I'm going to walk in and people are going to be like, well, good for you, man. That's awesome. So there's, it's a tricky task, but it's definitely a task worth doing, I feel.
Absolutely. I want to move on to the economy, and something that I read in your platform is that you and I can see from your sweatshirt, you work at the conservation district. And something.
Yeah, sorry, I just got off work not too long ago.
No, please. So if you want to talk about that, for what you do, that's cool. But something that I wanted to, that I saw on your platform, is kind of talking about how we can have a robust rural economy and a clean environment. And I think somehow through centuries of Pennsylvania, you know, really intensive extractive economies, whether that's lumber or coal or now natural gas, we've just sort of embedded it into our mind that to have a robust rural economy, we need to be trashing our environment. I wonder if you could just talk about how you envision that, and how do we create a more robust rural economy?
So first, I guess I'll start off with the logging portion. Obviously, being a part of the conservation district and studying the environmental field for a while, this is a pretty close to home topic. But the logging aspect up here, a lot of loggers have adopted sustainable foresting harvesting methods, and they see the benefits of forest management and things like that. I think the logging aspect is actually would be a good example to follow. It wasn't anything flashy. It wasn't anything that, it was just educating the people on the ground and linking it to the economic value. Stripping the forest of all your resources, what are you going to sell in the next 20 years? It's as simple as that. So, hey, work with us. Work with scientists to better promote future gains, as well as seeing what you can make now. I believe that in our area, they've been doing a great job with sustainable foresting, and they're always striving even further to find the next cool thing or the next innovative thing to help promote that. As for coal and natural gas, one thing that I firmly believe in is that when people come up and ask me if I believe in climate change, my answer every time is that it's not a belief when it's science. That would be like me asking you if you believe in gravity. It just, when the overwhelming consensus is 98 point whatever percent of scientists attribute man-made climate change, that's the same amount as gravity. So it's not really a belief at that point. It's fact, and I treat it as such. Now to tie that in with economic gain, like the foresters have been doing for a while, it's inevitable. We call them non-renewable resources for a reason. We're going to run out. They're non-renewable. So it just makes sense to get ahead of the curve with renewable resources. And in a rural area like we have, for us not to try to be the innovators and the lead on something that we can set the example or set the tone and draw people from all over to come see the solar innovation or geothermal innovation that we have, I feel would be a missed opportunity. and will be a missed opportunity if we don't act here in the near future with trying to attract some of these renewable resource innovators to our area. And before we even get that far, we need to update our infrastructure. We are one of our big problems is rural broadband. You could go to most farmhouses and they don't even have access to high-speed internet. They don't notice. I didn't notice growing up. I was in one of the farmhouses. We didn't have high-speed internet. It's just one of the things you live with. But once everybody's demanding that you need that technology and will not move their business to that area without guaranteed access to it or set up infrastructure to get it readily available, it's a no-brainer. You're not attractive market.
It's just like power and water these days. It's essential infrastructure.
You wouldn't buy a camp in the middle of nowhere without a hookup to, or you wouldn't buy a house without hookup to water and electricity. So why would a company come here where they can't even hook up to do their payroll?
Yeah, exactly. I want to stay on this bit about renewable energy. I am just finishing a master's in climate change adaptation.
You're a believer.
I'm a believer, yeah. I've got the faith, man.
Gotcha. Good to hear.
Yeah, so and
team seems like it's a great place for that.
Well, I mean, I think so, yes. And something that I've really taken away from my time here in Sweden is that they do have an extremely robust manufacturing sector. You've got a lot of really strong companies that are making, you know, they're making Volvos, they're making, Tetra Pak is just a few miles from where I live, which makes all of these little cartons of milk and stuff like that. So you've got a lot of manufacturing. You've got a lot of companies like Spotify that are more digital. They've just got a very robust economy, and it's extremely green too. And
it's wild.
Yeah, it's wild. And this isn't so hard for us to do. It just takes a little bit of investment in all of our areas. A little bit more investment in our infrastructure. What do you see as, like, what do you think the state of Pennsylvania can do to really spurn some growth in these areas, in our rural areas?
My thought would be doing kind of a statewide environmental audit, because I'm sure you know not one size fits all when it comes to renewable resource production/consumption. I would like to see Pennsylvania do an audit of each region and say, hey, your shoe is geothermal. Hey, you guys have the capacity for wind. You guys have a mix for solar and wind. Kind of do a internal audit and just show people that your area is primed for this type of renewable resource. If we implement it, this is how many, like, put pen to paper what we're talking about, what we're seeing. And because I think everybody has heard the spiel, if you put a solar panel on your house, it'll reduce your energy consumption by however much. I've seen that pieced apart by multiple entities left and right. It's just, it doesn't seem like it gains traction. I think we need to up the ante, up the mold a little bit and go statewide, show it as a collective unit and go, here are the pieces, guys. do you want to implement it now or are we going to wait?
Yeah. And of course the answer is no, but I like the idea of having an audit and just like really looking very critically at each region and seeing what our strengths are. Cause it wouldn't
maybe audit's a bad word. Cause no one likes to hear the A word. But.
Well, audit's okay, but you're right. We need to frame this better. An opportunity exploration.
There we go. That's a little better. You really want to make the Wrights head spin. Say we're going to do an energy audit of a state, and then that'll go over well.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of the right wing, I noticed on your Facebook page that you had posted a collection of pictures of people with your political signs and Donald Trump political signs, and I just thought that was super awesome. And you are running in a pretty conservative area. I mean, despite the fact that Obama won Elk County in 2008.
Yeah.
So it's not so far gone or anything like that. But it's you know, you've got some, and I come from a conservative area too. We've got to bring our conservative friends into the coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you found a lot of success doing that. And I'm wondering if you can tell us how do we create a more a better rural Democratic Party? Like how can we gain traction in our rural areas?
I don't want to say it's simple, but it's simple. Just listen. Don't get in a tizzy when someone disagrees with you. See, the way that I've gotten to know and to really appreciate where someone else is coming from with a different, not only political views, but societal views, everything. It takes practice. It takes time, but being able to remove yourself from your views and kind of try to place yourself in someone else's position and kind of see, okay, if I was brought up that way and I had this job and I saw this and this, okay, I see where you're coming from. That makes sense. You're not a radical. You're just playing with the cards that you're dealt. And then while you're flipping through those cards, you find that you have a couple pairs. So once you find a pair, you start building upon that and then building upon another one. And luckily through this whole process, I have realized that, like you just said, Elk County went to Obama not that long ago. Especially in a small community, we all want generally the same things. We want our schools to do well. We want to support local business. We're all hunters and fishermen. We want our environment to stay beautiful and have clean water. It's not until people just start throwing mud at each other that a civil conversation goes into a tailspin of your uncle talking nonsense at Thanksgiving. And that's what we're, if I can make a couple more Thanksgivings a little more palatable by the end of my political career, then I'll call that a win.
that's a good goal. but I hope you do, you're able to do much more than that. I confess to not know this. You're not currently in political office though, right?
No.
And do you have plans to run for more offices after this?
So I didn't realize how many times I would get that question asked. And usually you're kind of prepped for most of the, like you get an answer ready. And this was one early on that I wasn't ready for. I was like, well, I mean, I'm trying to get through this one. I haven't really thought that far down the road. So we kind of found ourselves in this situation. The Republican candidates were going to run unopposed. This was a long-term goal of my wife and I's to have someone step into the political arena at some point. And then just too many stars aligned all at once to not put our hat in. So if something like that were to happen again, it wasn't like an off the cuff where this is what we're doing. It took a lot of time to, hey, well, cause she's a nurse in Dubois and she is also in school, studying to get her nurse practitioner's license. So she's extremely busy. Now we're both extremely busy, even more than usual. So I can't give a definitive yes or no, essentially.
You're already starting to sound like a politician, Mitt. I'm just kidding with you.
Trying, man.
No, I mean, it was a bad question, and I'm sorry.
No, but it's not.
The crux of it was like, I guess, like, why did you step forward?
Hey, man, that was not a bad question. I'm just bad at answering it because I don't know the answer. That's the problem. I would hope so. Like I said, I don't know. We'll just have to see in November kind of what happens, what the taste is in our mouths after the election, what the landscape is. There's a lot of variables in the future that obviously we can't see. But regardless, I still intend to be a leader in our community going forward. So at a bare minimum, hopefully this gives me a better platform to achieve that goal. And I can tell you that will be a goal of ours in the future, whether or not that takes the form of public office. That's TBD, but yeah.
I've got one more question. And then I'm going to try and wind this down a little bit, but yeah. I'm curious, what's one thing that you either like learned that was unexpected or that you changed your mind on when you were running for this, just in talking with people and doing your research?
One thing that I learned that was unexpected. Is that what you,
yeah, you didn't expect to learn that about your community or about an issue or something that you changed your mind on?
One thing that because there's a lot, so I'm trying to figure out which one
you can say multiple if you want, but if you want to pick the one that the ringer, that's good too. And
so I'm gonna go with, just because if I don't bring up rural healthcare, my wife's gonna kill me, so I'll go with that.
Okay, yeah.
No, but it's obviously, just about everybody in our area knows that rural healthcare is a problem. My wife works for a healthcare facility and she describes to me kind of the disparities that she sees on a day-to-day basis. But, I was kind of taking that with a grain of salt. It's just work pretty much. I mean, it's not just work to her. That's her life. She lives to help people. She's 100%, 100% of the time. But hearing especially women's stories in our region of the lack of women's health care, the kind of trials that they go through on a day-to-day basis just for regular everyday needs as a white male, I never was able to wrap my head around, and it's not stuff my wife likes to talk about. So it took a group of separate women to actually open up and be vulnerable to me and tell me their personal stories of how they have been denied just just female healthcare across the board, whether it be for routine appointments or just anything specialized, they have to travel miles just to sit on a waiting list. It's something that's really opened up my eyes and needs to be addressed sooner than later. That we need to get our area better access and more access to quality healthcare in our area. Oh, I think you're muted.
Oh, thank you. And how do we go about doing that? Because healthcare is one of those things that it's ultimately kind of a national thing, you know, because we have, you know, Medicare and Medicaid and all this stuff. But Pennsylvania, the state, can have a role in this by expanding Medicaid and all that stuff. But like, how do you see us, like, if you were a state legislator, how do you see us slowly going and addressing this?
So we have multiple programs in the area that are low funded. It's mostly donationally funded. They get some help, but places that are called like community nurses, think there's avenues in our area that with state and federal help, they're just not turning profits. And that's why they're not here. We don't have the numbers of people to keep it a completely profitable shop, if that's what you want to call it. As a legislator, we need to get creative with ways to get these shops open. And I don't know what facets we need to tie them to, but we need to tie them on to the local hospitals or major hospitals and get them, make it a prerequisite that, hey, this needs to stay open. This needs to be here. Not put an end date on it. This just needs to be open until, just because it needs to serve this community. If you want to make the big bucks over here, you're going to have to help us out and serve our community here. So through legislative power, I think we just need to be tough on the big guys and really make it a point that, hey, if we're helping you out, you need to help us out.
Yeah. If you PMC can get that company jet, they need to have a clinic in our county. Great. So I want to close by asking you, what have you been watching? What have you been listening to? Just on Netflix or, you know, whatever to pass the time.
Oh yeah. That's one thing we haven't really had to do was find something to pass the time. But when my wife and I finally get to sit down and eat dinner at 9:30 each night, obviously we turn on The Office because that's just what's on Netflix. But, other than that, we actually watched the show Meat Eater on Netflix, with Steve Urkel. It's a hunting show. We're in the middle of the woods. We're big outdoorsmen. So that, and he also peppers in some cooking and stuff like that. So it's the only hunting show I could talk her into watching because of the food aspect. So I definitely run with it. And he just came out with a new season. So I was like, hey.
Yeah. I'm not a hunter, but I'm not opposed. You'll have to, when I'm back in Pennsylvania, you'll have to take me out sometime, but I'm curious.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is Elk County a misnomer, or are there elk there, or am I, it's just a dumbass?
Nope. Elk County, we do have elk. We have the largest, us in Cameron County, have the two largest herds in the state. The elk herd's pretty localized to our area. And it's actually been a huge draw. Right now they're rutting. Oh. So they bugle and they're out in all the fields. Just this past weekend, close to 60,000 people came through the doors of our visitor center because they have a beautiful setup up in Benazet. If you've never seen one up close, we'll get you down here, get you in a tree stand, and show you a few elk.
Wow. All right, great. Well, Ryan, it was an absolute pleasure talking with you. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you, and congrats on your master's.
Thank you.